We'll now go to agenda item six, smoke management rule implementation. It's a nice sunny day for this. And
good afternoon, Chair Emerson, members of the board. For the record, my name is Doug Graff. I serve as Chief of Fire Protection for the Department of Forestry. We're here today at the request of the board from 2019, when the board passed new rules regarding smoke management program. We listened to that audio from March of 2019, specifically to remind ourselves of what you asked for. And there was a couple details there that Nick will highlight, and Michael to my left, community response plans and the current status on those exemptions was specifically the request. Of course, we'll give a broad status update on that. So you are just a reminder, you know, we're all recorded on this. So those come in handy at times as we're a year later, we're evaluating specifically what you asked for. So thank you, Nick, for doing that. Now, we'll keep the presentation tight today because it is a briefing. There's no decision today and an opportunity to answer any questions and have a dialogue, given that was a fundamental change in the way we do business as it relates to prescribed burning and smoke management. So I want to ensure we have that time. So we do have a half hour scheduled. I'll open up with the high level of the policy changes as a reminder, and then share some of the data to date that we have in terms of 1 year. That's not an awful lot in terms of change, you know, with given 1 year, but we'll report what's occurred to date in terms of what the data is telling us. Nick Yonker to my left will speak to the implementation of the program, and what he probably won't tell you, because he'll be relatively modest on this, is the depth and fundamental change turning the program upside down in terms of how we administer this program that was necessary to deliver the intent of the rule changes. This team has done an outstanding work to modify daily forecasts, to adjust the modeling necessary and the tracking necessary to ensure we met the intent of the rule change. So I wanted just a shout out to Nick on that. And then we'll close with Michael and Gabriella. I stalled long enough. Michael from DEQ will speak specifically to the communication outreach and exemption question you had. And then Gabriella Goldfarm, I think, is probably a new face to this board in terms of presenting on this committee, but she has, from the 3 years of effort, was very close with Oregon Health Authority from the beginning to the end. We just had Kirsten Eard with us presenting at the times, but Gabriella has been with us from the beginning. Welcome. Thank you. So that's our panel today. I did brief the board coming into this that I would highlight Gregory McLaren's work, which is our Smoke Management Advisory Committee chair, and he couldn't be with us today. So I asked Nick to fill in. And the comment there for me is, you know, this was a grassroots effort to effect change and change really Oregon's paradigm around how we think about smoke. And it takes that type of effort from leadership, from Oregonians across the state, and he's one of them. So I really wanted to just honor and recognize him for that, but he couldn't make that today. So 1 year's effort, what is the rule change? Someone already did that. Thank you. What are the fundamental changes? Ultimately, we took a program, smoke management program, and created more opportunities to utilize prescribed fire to mitigate the risk of the increasing risk of catastrophic wildfire on the landscape today. And we did that by looking at the rules and definition of what an intrusion was. And an intrusion, by definition, prior to the rule change in 2019, was any smoke entering into communities at the ground level from prescribed fire. And we changed that zero tolerance smoke to a health standard tolerance that protects the national ambient air quality standard. And that's a fundamental change, and back to that paradigm shift in the way we think about smoke in the air from prescribed fire. So there is a tolerance if you will, to smoke, which required that fundamental and foundational change administratively for Nick's shop to adjust the whole program to track at that level. And we created a new classification, which was a smoke incident. And then we kept the same title as a smoke intrusion once you reach past that threshold, a human health standard threshold protecting the national ambient air quality. So we have two titles in terms of when smoke enters a community. In order to increase smoke from prescribed burning across Oregon, there's a recognition you must preserve public health, and that's the standard we put up against the national ambient air quality, and we must have a broader conversation around catastrophic wildfire and the use of prescribed fire to mitigate that. So there's an expectations on communications, and my colleagues will speak more specifically to those details. Those are fundamentally the place we change the rules. And what has that done in our first year of experience? Our 10-year average for prescribed burning set at approximately 175,000 acres burned. In 2019 through the winter, we increased that to 195,000 acres. When I talk to my colleagues in the West, that far surpasses what we're doing with other states to give some context. There are states that I pulled from Montana to Washington to Idaho, Nevada, were far less than half of that in terms of accomplishments. So we're really leading the conversation in Oregon, and it's that grassroots, you know, effort really that puts us at this place. So we increased from 175 to 195, but that's not a long time to consider a 10-year average. It's about a little over 10% increase. We suspected that was quite possible in the first year. And I think key to that measurement is the large fire, prescribed fires. We moved from 100-acre prescribed fires. We saw three that were well over 1,000 acres, up to 8,000 acres of prescribed burn. And that's really, really changing the effort. So great success in increasing the size of those prescribed burns to mitigate catastrophic fire. And then specifically as you look at smoke incident as opposed to intrusions, prior to the rule change, we were averaging 9 intrusions a year. Because we tightened that window of what an intrusion is, we had 6 this year, but we had 38 smoke incidents. So the point there is that tolerance to allow some level of smoke below the human health standard that puts us at risk was increased. So that's, I think, the key data point I can share today that says we're engaging smoke management in a different way by ensuring now we're getting those priority burns in and around communities, particularly where you know you're going to have some level of smoke. Unavoidable, and it shows in that data point with 38. With that, I turn it over to my colleagues. Nick.
Good afternoon, Chair Imeson, State Forester Daugherty, members of the board. Nick Yonker for the record, Smoke Management Program Manager. And so from the last time when you saw me last January, we've been pretty busy with going out in the field and providing presentations. We've had 26 presentations throughout the state or on Zoom or by phone and so forth, radio stations and so forth. So, but we have been all around the state as well. And we're talking about to our state, federal, and private stakeholders, essentially, what is this new change? And so they demanded, it's not like we were pushing it out there. They were coming to us and they said, we want you to come here. Let us know what's going on. And so we provided what changes are to the rules, how things are going to get implemented. And then, as we're going in the future and what challenges we're going to deal with and what benefits we're going to be provided. So that's what they were looking for, and just really kind of getting a picture of what was going on and just having somebody to talk to on this. So that's what we were doing for basically from February on to November of this last fall. So that got us very busy and pretty much kept us totally busy with just dealing with that part of the update. Then we also had to change how we did our forecasting. Forecasting was basically meant for burning so much to where we did not cause a smoke intrusion into an SSRA or a smoke sensitive receptor area to allowing a certain amount. We've been under the old rules for 32 plus years. And so we had a pretty good system of how things worked then. And now we had to go to something else. And that took a lot of analysis, and everything eventually just had to be in some ways thrown out. We just said, well, we just need to increase everything to a certain degree. But we had some method to our madness. The main thing what we wanted to do was on the best burning days where you have good mixing, the smoke disperses easily and so forth, that would be the greatest amount of increase that we would do. But as we got worse mixing and worse dispersion, we would reduce that increase. So there was about maybe a 10% increase on the worst days to about a 50% increase on the best days. And the idea there is that when it's bad, it doesn't get better very quickly. And so we don't want to put smoke into an area and then it just lingers around and it's very unhealthy for folks. We know when we're doing a burning under a good situation that if it does get fairly smoky, it's not going to last too long and people will be out of it pretty quickly and they can take actions to mitigate the smoke hazard to their health and so forth. So that was something we finished up in the fall just in time for fall burning. And so one of the two key things. And the other key message that we got out was in the communication side of things, we did get out the statewide communication framework, which was part of the 629-0180, the first piece that we wanted to get out in our communication. And that was the communication framework, which essentially focused on five items that were in the rule. And we got that out to basically our state, our district foresters, our federal partners, the leadership there, and out to all the health agencies, all the county health agencies throughout the state. And that way they would know what's going on. So this statewide plan is essentially supposed to go throughout the state communicating the message of why we do the burning and we're going to mitigate the hazard and so forth. And so that's what we want to get out. And we're going to do this every year. So this is going to be something that is ongoing. Communication is going to be always ongoing in this. And this is one of our key changes to our rule is how we communicate out to the communities. So the last piece that we have is where I'm going to have DEQ and OHA talk about our community response plans and where we're going in the future. So we're just getting that started. So I will hand it off to Michael.
Great, thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Amison and Forrester Doherty and members. My name is Gabriella Goldfarb. I'm the Environmental Public Health Section Manager at the Oregon Health Authority. My colleague, Kirsten Aird, was the point person, but we had quite a network of people internally at OHA across our division working on these issues and collaborating. So I've been working with Kirsten on those issues for a few years, as Doug was explaining, and she's now in a new role at OHA. So she's our operations director, and she's among the people who are not sleeping or taking naps in the gym room on our top floor. And my apologies for not being here more timely. We're all updating our continuity of operations plans and doing a lot of other scrambling, all hands on deck. But I'm very glad to be here to talk about this partnership and what's happening with community response plans and what we can and can't say about health impacts from prescribed burning at this point. So coinciding very much with what Doug said, you know, the public health community in Oregon, I believe, understands the science that says prescribed burning reduces the severity and intensity of wildfire. And the science, though, also tells us that smoke is harmful to health, regardless of its source, whether it's a wildfire or a prescribed burn, so any kind of wildland fire. But that also the future holds more of both types of smoke. So the updated smoke management rules encourage and in some cases require the development of these community response plans. And you know, we feel very strongly that with good planning and outreach and communication to the public, which you've you know, been hearing all along, that we can really reduce the impacts to the public and especially vulnerable populations. So that's people with underlying respiratory and cardiovascular conditions, pregnant women, children. Those are the people who are most vulnerable to impacts from breathing smoke. So we need, you know, effective partnering among the public and private forest land managers, environmental agencies, health agencies, and the community. That's the essential ingredient here, in order to develop those kinds of plans that are going to protect those populations. So Deschutes County was first out of the gate in developing a community response plan, and everybody really learned a lot in that process. It's still early days, but we can point to some really positive outcomes of the process, good communication actions, and emerging lessons. And I included a picture of the CentralOregonFire.org website, which I'm guessing many of you have visited, but if you haven't, it's really worth a look because we think it's a great example of the community coming together and providing a really valuable resource. This is really important because this is de facto the template for the other communities that are going to come forward that you're going to hear about from Michael. You know, to be candid, the initial very first draft of the plan didn't meet the criteria in rule, but the right thing happened. You know, the folks who were putting it together got feedback, got coordinated feedback from our agencies, and they came back with a really great plan that resulted in something like this. This is one main tool. The other one is the text alert system that is now people can sign up for. Actually, I just signed up for it, so I could see how it works in action. And that's a great example of what people need. From on the ground, it seems like we could expand. I understand there's about 2,000 subscribers to that. I don't know if anybody here knows that number for sure. And we probably need about 10 times that many, subscribe to it. So more outreach and engagement to publicize that as a resource. And there needs to be more education, of the public and fine-tuning of probably the communications. I'm hearing feedback that people may get notified that there's a burn starting, but they may not be educated in that communication that it may last 2 or 3 days. There may be smoke, not just that one day. So that's an example of the kind of lessons that we're learning that we can feed back into our, you know, communication kind of loops. So that would be... let's see. Yeah, I think I'll leave it at that in the interest of time. Again, how do we fine tune and work with our federal partners in particular, so that not only, you know, communicating how long this may last, but if there's a sudden change. We do hear sometimes people, you know, the wind shifts, that's unpredictable, but how can we make sure that we get the word out? So I think I'll stop there on the communication with, community response plans and go to the next slide. Oh, that's me. Thank you. So this is something I wanted to show that is just illustrative of the fact that we do see health impacts when there's elevated smoke levels. So this is, you know, you can really see the correlation. This is the Eagle Creek fire. We saw on the peak day, September 5th, 20% more people coming into emergency departments complaining of various asthma-like symptoms than we would normally see. So that's a pretty clear signal. Now, we don't have that kind of data. We're not able to see that signal yet for prescribed burning. I think this first fall season in particular, well, there was an increase. This is still a new science to figure out how to assess the direct impacts. And it's something that Oregon Health Authority is working on. We're being asked not only to assess the health impacts, but what are the costs of wildfire, first and foremost, and that we're seeing that in the legislative conversation that's going on now. But we also are interested because at the end of the day, we want to be able to have evidence that shows us that yes, you know, over time, we are going to reduce the health impacts of wildland smoke, of wildfire smoke by doing these kinds of treatments. Just on the health side, and you've heard this before, but it's my first time in front of you, so I'll deliver that message. You know, the biggest impact on people's health are the small particles, PM2.5 particulate matter, 2.5 microns in size, that enter the lung and subsequently the bloodstream, and inhaling these particles are going to cause illnesses such as bronchitis, aggravate existing heart and respiratory diseases such as asthma, as well as irritating eyes and nose, and having just broader impacts to people's quality of life, to kids, you know, sports leagues and athletic events and, you know, all kinds of things. For this, just to illustrate how we did this, we used data from hospitals and urgent care clinics in the counties that were affected, Multnomah, Washington, Clackamas, Yamhill, Wasco, Hood River, and Columbia counties, together with air quality data from DEQ, to document, to put this together. And it's again, a very narrow slice of how people's health and welfare was affected. It doesn't include office visits. It doesn't include people buying air filtration systems, you know, things like that. So that's the methodologies that we're trying to work on now to really capture the overall cost. But it's challenging. So you need very detailed data on healthcare visits, geography and fire spread, air quality and weather. We usually need to have large enough populations to be affected to send a clear signal. Finally, it also requires kind of pretty sophisticated analytic methods that have only recently begun to be applied to the study of wildfire health effects by academic researchers. So we're in early days of developing this. But as we make progress and as the use of prescribed fire expands in Oregon, we'll see about applying these methodologies to assess prescribed burn smoke impacts. But we're not there yet. So I will turn it over to Michael now to talk about other communities that are going to be working on these.
Great. Thank you, Gabriella. Chair Imason, State Forester Dowdery Board, members, my name is Michael Orman, and I'm the Air Quality Planning Section Manager for Oregon DEQ, and I was lucky enough to participate through the smoke management process of the rulemaking, and I'm going to cover a couple of recent activities that DEQ has been working on from the community response planning efforts and other efforts that we'll focus on in the coming years, focused on smoke management. But before I do so, I'd like to take an opportunity to introduce the board to a new staff member of mine, Margaret, if you can stand. Margaret Miller, also a forester, has joined my team and will be working on smoke management topics, and just thought it'd be good for the board to meet Margaret, and most likely will come before you at some point in the future. Now to focus your attention to the slide, wanted to cover smoke mitigation and community response plan grants that DEQ has been working on. In 2019 legislative session, DEQ received $250,000 of general fund to focus towards local communities and assisting them to develop community response plans and to evaluate smoke mitigation projects, to implement a smoke mitigation project. And DEQ went through an RFP process, request for proposals, with local communities, and selected ultimately Lakeview, Oak Ridge, Ashland, the Enterprise Wallala County area, and Baker County in receiving some funds to focus on community response plan development. And the city of Ashland was also selected to receive funds to implement a smoke impact mitigation project. In general, the scope of the work will include inventory and existing needs and response protocols, establishing regular community response plan task force meetings, hosting community input sessions, developing community response plans in accordance with the rules that were adopted last year, and disseminating plans and testing response effectiveness with community outreach. So we're really excited about this opportunity. We're in the process of finalizing our agreements at this point. And so the agreements will run from about April until March of next year. And we're excited to see progress that communities make and be able to talk about that in future sessions to see if we can get more funding for this type of work. And finally, I'll cover some future work that DEQ is looking into in partnership with folks here at the table and stakeholders outside. Related to the Wildfire Council recommendations, DEQ will be looking into some alternatives to pile burning in an effort to also mitigate wildfire smoke and prescribe fire smoke, and see if there's ways to build on some of the work that's happened within Oregon on alternatives to pile burning, like some of the images you see on the slide here, torrefaction and biofuels and as such. With the increase in the need for wildfire mitigation and prescribed fire in general, you know, we're really interested in finding ways to also mitigate the smoke impacts from the use of alternatives like utilization and other burning techniques, and really using all the tools in our toolbox to be able to go at the issue. And so that's something that we'll be working on in the future, and I'm interested in the board's direction and any questions you might have there.
Excellent. And that concludes. I wanted to leave time for any questions or follow-ups.
Yeah, I've got a question regarding the geographic scope and scale of your community response plans. So you mentioned Bend, and I'm down from the Medford-Ashland area, and I know Ashland is working on one. I'm more familiar with the airshed down in Southwest than I am at Bend. The question is, are you trying, you know, we've labeled it Bend and Ashland. Is it just literally those municipalities that are involved, or is the response plan on an airshed basis? Because whatever burning they do in the Ashland watershed is also going to affect Medford and Central Point and Eagle Point, and, you know, so it's kind of that kind of a question.
Board Member Williams, good question. I think it depends on the community and the focus of the community itself. With the agreements that we're pulling together, a lot of them are coming through counties, and the county public health agency will be involved in working with communities as they develop those, but each community is different in how they receive information. And so for the Ashland example, it would be a question that we'd have to work through with the folks who put the grant application together to see the scope of their communication efforts and if it'll cover more than just the city of Ashland.
Ed, obviously to the extent you can encourage it, I would think that these community response plans would be far more effective to cover an airshed. Mm-hmm. Particularly in areas like the Rogue Basin, where you have an enclosed basin, and where all of us in the basin are going to be affected by any burning prescribed fire that goes on and is produced.
Thank you. A big part, I think, of the benefit of the community response plan is making sure that everybody who's potentially affected by a given prescribed fire is informed both to protect themselves and educated about, you know, what our trade-offs are and why we're, you know, the link between the increase in prescribed fire and what we assume and hope to discover is a decrease in smoke from wildfire. So the broader group of people within the community response plan that we can include, I think, would be really beneficial.
Chair Emerson, Member Williams, agreed. I think that's one benefit to the degree that the county public health agencies are at the table. Yeah, they have that broader perspective about, you know, who, and also they collaborate with neighboring counties as well. So they do have that bigger picture. I always have to say, and I'm pretty sure you would have heard this from Kirsten Aird as well, the local public health is not well resourced and doesn't always have the resources to engage as fully as they might, but everybody does feel a sense of urgency and that they will come to the table and help with that, but they do have limits on what they how much they can sit at the table.
This seems like an area living in a small place helps. So that per the note there, that the City of Enterprise is a joint one with Wallowa County, and part of it's because the City of Enterprise Fire Marshal is also the county's emergency services manager, wearing both hats, and brought everybody to the table to develop our proposal.
Nick, I have a question. It was really interesting in your talking about how you change the way you when you forecast and how you, you know, the the criteria that you go into for making that decision, because I've been on the other end of that phone trying to get permission to burn. It's interesting. I'm making the assumption, and you talk about mixing days. You know, there's days that makes a lot of sense to burn. Smoke's going to leave quickly, whatever. Do you actually, does it happen in the sense that you have a situation where you burn, you know you're going to have an incident? In other words, you had 38 incidents, but we're still going to make a decision. We fully know there's going to be a smoke incident. Is that happening?
Yes, and actually seeing that number of 38 incidents versus 6 intrusions is kind of demonstrating the success of the plan that we did put smoke into a community. Sometimes some were non-SSRAs and some were SSRAs, and we're charged to protect specifically at the highest level the SSRAs, but the point is that we did get some smoke in because we increased the amount of burning, but the idea that we've got to test it to see how far can we go. So it doesn't take much to go from an incident to an intrusion, and it doesn't take much to go from an intrusion to a exceedance of the ambient air quality standards. So we have to be cautious in some degree, but we have shown we've been able to burn a little bit more. Some smoke goes in, but at a light level that does cause a problem. So we've been able to do that pretty successfully. I don't want to be optimistic with just a 1-year test because we have to go through several years of this, but it was a good start this year, fortunately.
I mean, I appreciate the work you're doing because that's hard. I mean, that's hard. And so I really appreciate you guys working hard at understanding that and trying to be effective with that. I really appreciate that, Nick.
Every bit of smoke that goes into a community is a learning experience. So,
I just want to really thank you for the kind of approach you've taken to this. This was a difficult issue, and it took a while for us to get to my recollection is always up in Union County where you couldn't quite make it. You had a little issue on the way, but I think the example, you know, that you mentioned of Bend and that the initial plan that they brought wasn't one that folks could agree to, but instead of the, you know, bring us another rock, really that effort to sit down and work with people, I think that's what will make this successful, and achieve the goals that we, you know, the different agencies have, the different boards have to deal with these issues. It seems like, to me, a really good report that you've provided. And I just urge you to keep up that kind of collaborative effort. I'd also recognize that Wade Mosby is here, who is our EQC counterpart, and you know, we're involved in you know, a number of issues that both Joe and Wade are intimately familiar with. But I think it's really helpful to kind of keep this going on these issues that are key for all of us. So appreciate it.
Thank you, Chair Imeson. We will be presented in front of the EQC. So this will be round 2 for you, Wade. I didn't see you back there coming up later on this month. So we'll close the loop there. They requested us also, as this board did, to come back after 1 year.
Great.
Yeah.
Thanks. No, we don't have public comment.